Very, very dark readings today. And they give rise to a series of questions in my mind. Like, are you satisfied with life? Are you happy? Are things good? Why is it that so many in society are addicted to seeking new and bigger thrills in a spirit of restless desperation? And I can only conclude that most of us haven't found happiness, otherwise we still wouldn't be looking for it. And logically, the very fact that we can conceive of a happiness greater than we have now is proof that we are not happy. Without a doubt, at times in our life, we've attained what we believe would make us happy, but when we got it, were we? Think of Christmas and how eagerly you look forward to it. The food, the toys, the festivities. Christmas came, and after you'd eaten your fill and unwrapped your gifts, you climbed up into your bed and you said how things didn't quite measure up. And hasn't that happened 1,000 times? Or think of how you look forward to travel, visiting all those strange and exotic places, and after the trip was over, you have to admit to yourself that the two best days were the day you left and the day you got home. Perhaps you thought wealth would bring you happiness. And now that you've got it, you're afraid of losing. The fact is that we want to be perfectly happy, but we are not. How do we deal with these feelings of disappointment? Now, in the epistle this morning, St. Paul talks about two different kinds of people. The first group he talks about are those whose God is their belly, which is a symbol for all of our earthly appetites. These people react to the disappointments of life by becoming cynical. Life, they say, is a snare and a delusion. So we might as well get as much fun out of it as possible. And they clutch at every titillation and excitement their senses can afford. These people, says St. Paul, glory in their shame with minds set on earthly things. And everything becomes an incessant quest for what is commonly called a good time. And the funny thing is, that as the desire for pleasure increases, the satisfaction from pleasure decreases. And this philosophy of life is based on the law of diminishing returns. And as the years roll by, the capacity for happiness diminishes. If your philosophy of life is always to have a good time, you've long ago discovered that you never have a good time because you're always in pursuit of happiness without ever really capturing it. It's like turning the pages of a book without reading it. And then you begin to blame the things around you for your disappointments. If you're married, you'll say, if I had another husband or another wife, I'd be happy. Or if I had another job, I'd be happy. Or if I lived somewhere else, I'd be happy. In every instance, happiness is something outside of yourself. You keep chasing ghosts until death overtakes you. Now, the second kind of person is like St. Paul himself, who presses on toward the upward call of God in Christ. In other words, pressing on to the goal of heaven. If the first person reacted to the disappointments of life by becoming cynical, The second person will react to the disappointments of life by becoming religious. They say, I must have been made for happiness. Would a fish have an urge to swim if there were no water? Would a baby cry for nourishment if there were no food? Would there be an ear if there were not melodies to hear? Would there be a craving for perfect happiness if that didn't exist? And these people go on to reason, if I'm disappointed, it must be that I'm looking for happiness in the wrong places. I have a God-shaped hole in my middle, and the only thing that will fill it is God. Now, whenever we are disappointed in life, and we all are at times, and we still dream of happiness, that is God for whom we are looking. And our unhappiness is not due to lack of money or fame or bad nutrition or our mother. It's not one thing, it's your mother. Or any other earthly thing. It's because we're lacking God. Heaven is our destiny and our destination. And no wonder the God of our belly, the God of earthly things, disappoints. When we realize that we have a commonwealth in heaven, the urge to set our mind on earthly things lessens. We stop looking for first-rate joys where only 10th-rate pleasures can be found. And then we begin to see everything in perspective, and we see that the friendship that we have with other people, the joys of marriage, the thrill of possession, the sunset, art, music, gold, silver, all the comforts of the life are gifts from God. He drops them like little berries along the roadway of our life to remind us that if these things make us happy for a while, and they do, how real, how perfect the happiness of heaven must be. And we give thanks too every time we're disappointed, because that is God reminding us that perfect happiness is not here. Every disappointment, every faint hope, every frustrated desire points to God. I told this story once in the adult class, but it illustrates very well what I've been thinking. Fulton Sheen, you remember him, once said that our physical heart tells us why we were made. Our physical heart is not like a Valentine heart. It's in a regular shape, as if there were a piece missing. And Bishop Sheen said that when God made your heart, he found it so good, so lovable, that he kept a little bit of it in heaven. And he sent that heart into the world to enjoy his gifts and to use his gifts as stepping stones back to him, and to be ever mindful that we could never be perfectly happy in this life because we do not have a whole heart to be happy with. In order to be truly happy, in order to be wholehearted, we press on toward the goal of the upward call of God in Christ, until one day we recover that peace that God has been holding for you in heaven.